to my amazement, I love it, knowing that he loves me. He loves me, true, he doesn't show it. How could he, when he doesn't know it? Yesterday he loathed me, now today he likes me. And tomorrow.
Last Sunday, the First Lady of Baltimore Jazz, Ethel Ennis, passed away from complications of a stroke. Baltimore has produced many great jazz artists like Billie Holiday, Cab Calloway, UB Blake, and several others. And Ethel most certainly deserves her place in the panoply of these great jazz legends. She was a singer with uncanny technical gifts and a vivid, singular, and compelling musical imagination. She was a composer, she was a pianist, she was a gem. I interviewed Ethel three times when I was the culture editor on Maryland Morning, but I had befriended Ethel years earlier in 1985 when we were both hired to perform at the dedication of the Clarence Mitchell Courthouse in downtown Baltimore. Ethel sang the Star Spangled Banner, and I conducted the Baltimore Choral Arts Society in a motet called Alleluia. President Ronald Reagan had been scheduled to appear at that event. Ethel was no stranger to presidential audiences. She had sung at Richard Nixon's inauguration years earlier. At the last minute, President Reagan canceled his appearance at that dedication ceremony. But by the time we found out about that, I had found out that Ethel was one of the most charming, gracious, and fun people you'd ever want to meet. In 2002, Ethel performed at a ceremony to mark the issuance of a stamp in honor of the poet Ogden Nash. Mr. Nash was my wife's grandfather. The family was thrilled when Ethel agreed to sing Speak Low, a beautiful song by Kurt Weill, to which Mr. Nash contributed the lyrics. She sang it beautifully. In 2012, Ethel and her husband, Earl Arnett, organized a concert to raise money for the music department at Frederick Douglass High School, and we talked about it on Maryland Morning. Ethel, who grew up in Sandtown, Winchester, was a proud alumna of Douglass. She graduated in 1950. I asked her what she remembered about her alma mater.
I do remember being part of a musical, I guess you'd say assembly, where I was once the piano player with an all-male group. It was eight of us.
Uh-huh.
And I was the only female playing piano. And we used to do these little ditties as, you know, auditorium assemblies. And I was well-received. And they didn't know that I was musically inclined. So it
wow,
was,
you
it was,
kept it, that secret, huh?
Well, everything had to be kind of secret to in those days.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, doing okay, and people liked it, and that's how I guess they knew that Ethel could sing and play piano.
Ethel came to music early in life.
Well, it was funny because I wanted to be the world's greatest ballerina.
Don't we all?
Oh, listen at you. Listen at you. And music was just part of the family tradition. I mean, every Sunday we all had to have a recital. My brother had to play his lesson. My uncle, who was a longshoreman, was a violinist who never got away from melody and F.
He stuck with what he knew. Huh?
Right. Oh, boy, we used to hear that every Sunday. And my grandmother and of course, my mother was a church organist. And my grandmother had a wonderful voice. And music was just, it had to be a must. We had to do something, you know, outside of just living.
In 2007, a film historian named Stuart Hutchins organized a film festival devoted to African-American musical artists. Stu had unearthed rare television footage of Ethel, and he and Ethel shared it with us. Here's a clip from Ethel's appearance on the Bell Telephone Hour in 1964. She is introduced by the host of that program, Florence Henderson.
A new development of the summer theatrical season is the Music Festival. One of the oldest and most famous of these is the Newport Jazz Festival. The singer who made the Newport Festival jump for joy this year is a newcomer named Ethel Ennis. She's a Baltimore girl, and the word is that she's well on her way to being the biggest jazz attraction in years. She has taste and style, and she swings just right. And here she is, Miss Ethel Ennis.
When you're smiling, just keep on smiling, 'cause the whole world smiles with you. When you're laughing, just keep on laughing. The sun comes shining through.
Well, that's quite something, isn't it?
I'm telling you, that's a few pounds ago.
Ethel Ennis reacting to a tape of her performance of When You're Smiling in a live television broadcast of the Bell Telephone Hour in July 1964. We listened to it with the film historian Stuart Hutchins. A few months after that TV appearance, in January 1965, Ethel appeared again on the Bell Telephone Hour.
So proudly, you know it's the breath of spring that makes me sing my love song so madly. Good things come to those who wait, so just relax and wait for fate to let me see the day you say to me, I love you madly. Makes me sing my love song so loudly. Good things come to those who wait, so just relax and wait for fate to let me see the day you say to me, I love you madly. It's a better match for madly, madly, madly. Better get on madly, 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 because I love you so madly.
Ethel Ennis appearing on the Bell Telephone Hour in January 1965, singing I Love You Madly. The piano player in that performance was none other than Duke Ellington, but that little piano lick at the end, well, that was played by Ethel herself. In the mid-1960s, Ethel was indeed a rising star. In addition to a tremendous success at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1964, she was signed to a recording contract with RCA Records. But Ethel wasn't one of those young singers who would pursue fame at any cost. I asked her about how she navigated the demands of her management and record company while remaining true to herself as an artist.
Well, it is very true that you have all these people who want to form your career, and they feel that they have the pulse of the public. And I just couldn't go along all the way and lose myself.
What did they want you to do that you didn't want to do?
Well,
and by they, we're talking about the management and
the management, the appearance. I mean, you got to knock your teeth out. You got to fix your nose. You got to know how to sit and be with the people in the know. And it was a lot of things that were, it was almost going against my grain for gain. And you end up in pain.
And you also had some musical differences about the kinds of repertoire they wanted you to sing?
Yeah, very easy music. Songs that were written by friends. A lot of that happened. I remember one time at a recording session, they just brought in, a new song written by one of their friends, evidently. And I just read it down because I could. And I didn't want to do that. I'd rather sing from what I know and what I experience and the way I wanted to sing it. But, they want to tell you how to sing, and it's just a little much.
But you
take
always,
away your freedom.
Yeah, but you always, maintain your independence and your own view of where you were going as a singer and as an artist.
Well, going with the flow, you don't know.
She made light of it, but there are many who thought that holding fast to her principles cost Ethel Ennis a fair measure of fame and fortune. Ethel and I spoke again in 2012, just before a concert that Ethel and others performed in to celebrate her 80th birthday. We talked some more about her path to music making. Great to see you.
Well, it's great to be seen,
Tom.
Great
to be seen,
and not viewed. Talking about 80. Who's 80?
Who's 80? It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you you're as young thinking and young looking as ever, kiddo.
Oh, you know what to do and say to make my day.
But this did, your journey in music started when you were a child. You started playing in church, right?
Well, yeah.
Taking piano lessons
and
stuff?
Piano lessons at 7. And I would play for Sunday school and get my 50 cents a week.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an esteemed graduate of Douglas High School.
Indeed. Boy, 1950, y'all.
Yeah, and back in the day, I mean, the Douglas Music Program produced some amazing people. I mean, Anne Brown, who was the original Porgy and Bess on Broadway.
Yeah.
I mean, so you were in great company with some folks at Douglas.
That's very true. That's very true. I'm sure Cab came from there, too.
And yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Avon Long, who went to Broadway. He was, a lot of good old.
But when you got out of high school, you really just sort of went right to work. I mean, you got busy pretty quickly.
Well, I did study 2 years in business school. Cortez W. Peters. I wonder what ever happened. And
that's here in Baltimore?
Yes, mm-hmm. Right here in Baltimore on Utah Place.
Right.
That's where they had the school. And I was presented with the Shohan Award, which was a surprise to me. It was so funny when they called my name. They said, Ethel, get up. They're calling your name. And I said, So that was a wonderful surprise. And I still use my shorthand, writing down lyrics and things that come up real quick, and I can't write it in longhand. Shorthand comes in really handy.
Yeah, I mean, all the skills that you pick up, here and there, they all get put towards the cause.
It works, yeah.
But I guess was Benny Goodman your first sort of big break, and it was a sort of big national artist, when he invited you to be with his band?
I'm just trying to think the very first. Well, of course, it was my very first European tour. And at that time, I think I was recording with the Capitol label.
Mm-hmm.
And the photographer, they used to call him Pops Randolph, was the band boy for Benny. And that's when he went to George Fox, who was then my manager, and said, "Hey, Benny is looking for a vocalist to tour with him for the World's Fair." This was in 1958. And
so you're saying Brussels that year.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that was our last stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it all, you know, came about, and I auditioned. I think I sang and accompanied. I did accompany myself. I'll take romance. Yeah. And it was so funny. Benny Goodman sitting in the chair smiling. He did a lot of smiling. He just smiled and, you know, shook his head and almost as if to say, well, don't call me, I'll call you. And he did.
Yeah, he did. For once they did.
Yeah, right. 2 weeks later, we got, you know, got the telegram to come in and show up for rehearsal.
So when you're working with the likes of Benny Goodman and Duke Ellington, one of the last times you were on the show, we had a clip from a television appearance that you did, and the band stayed in the background until the very last note, and you went over and you kicked some guy off the piano, you sat down, you played the final chord, and the guy stands up and turns around, and it turns out it's Duke Ellington.
Right.
So, I mean, when you meet folks like that, back in those days, I mean, you were younger than them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here you are, an African-American woman,
yeah.
You know, trying to, you know, play with Benny Goodman's band, you know, obviously, you know, Duke Ellington perhaps a little more accepting of an African-American artist than Mr. Goodman, I wonder. But not to say that Mr. Goodman wasn't accepting, but mm-hmm. what was it like? What was the climate back there? What was it like breaking in such heady company?
I thought everybody did that.
So that's what I was saying, like, right. What you don't know don't hurt you?
That's yeah. it.
Uh-huh.
And it worked in my, you know, in my life so far. But I had no idea, you know, like, I've never been what you call burning with ambition. Here I am, if I'm to get it, I'll get it. If I don't, I don't. So it's the kind of thing, I guess I've lived my life that way. And I get a lot of wonderful gifts and sit back and, oh, that's what I did? Oh.
I mean, that could be a very healthy way of approaching it, because if you just sort of live and die on every audition or every gig or every record thing, you know, you can drive yourself nuts.
That's
pretty
right.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're also very well known as being an artist who was very principled and very strong in your in sticking to your guns, as it were. There were people on record labels and people, you know, concert promoters that wanted you to they wanted to market you as a certain kind of, you know, girl singer, a certain kind of female performing artist, and you didn't want anything to do with that.
Very true. Never wanted to be a star.
So why do you think that is? Because why everybody else who's out there doing these same auditions with Mr. Goodman and Mr. Ellington and Mr. Basie, you know, they all did want to be stars. A lot of them did. I mean, mm-hmm. Where do you think that impulse comes from? Not wanting to be a star.
Yeah, I'm quite sure a little from upbringing. I came from a very religious family. But I admire my grandmother so much. We used to call her Honey. And she always warned me against, being, I can say bedazzled, yeah. Be careful of the bright lights. Be careful of going against your grain for gain.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be... You know, you have to be comfortable in what you want to do and be. So I you know, I guess I lived my life along those lines.
Well, you know, you may not have wanted to be a star, but you ended up one.
Isn't that something? And I think that's why Sally Kravitz came up with the title of the book that she wrote about me. She said, "The Reluctant Jazz Star."
Yeah, that was in 1984.
Yeah,
biography
you
that she
listen
did.
At
that
you.
Was, that was
you've
a while
been,
ago.
You've been yeah. checking things
I've
out.
I've been checking okay. things out. I keep in touch here. I keep in touch. So I wonder. I mean, at age 80, mm-hmm. especially as a singer,
yeah.
you know, can you keep your chops up? Can you keep the flame, you know, lit?
Well, I guess it might be getting dimmer. But I still sing some of my songs in the same key as, you know, I started,
mm-hmm.
you know, years ago. But
But you are still working. I mean,
oh, I'm still working, and you know, still, you know, singing and enjoying it. You know, that's the main thing, enjoying it.
Ethel Ennis. We spoke in 2012, just before a tribute concert here in Baltimore that celebrated her 80th birthday. Ethel was married to her business partner and great love, Earl Arnett, for 51 years. Our hearts go out to Earl. Ethel Ennis died last Sunday at the age of 86.
The night is like a lovely tune. Beware, my foolish heart. How white the ever constant moon. Take care, my foolish heart. There's a line between love and fascination that's hard to see on an evening such as this. For they both give the very same sensation when you're lost in the magic of a kiss.
I'm Tom Hall. There's more coming up on Midday, right after this quick break.
Are much too close to mine. Beware, my foolish heart. But
this is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.